Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting today on Monday, December 7th, 2020. To begin with, please know that this meeting is being recorded. The audio of this meeting will be placed on our website as we do for all the AAC, BRS, and MAS meetings. Just a few helpful tips. People joining via phone call, you can press star 6 to mute or unmute yourself. You can press star 9 to raise your virtual hands or lower hands. That will indicate your intention to speak. Everyone joining via video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. You can also click on the hand icon to raise your hands or lower hands. If you would please do that, that'll tell us that you're intending to speak and we can have one speaker at a time. So in advance, thank you. we do have interpreters with us. So please state your name first and then your comment. This helps them do their job well. It also helps all the listeners on our phone calls knowing who's speaking. And when people listen in on the audio, it helps them listening and understanding who's speaking at that time. At this time, I will go ahead and take a roll call of the committee members. So please confirm your presence. Elver Ariza Silva. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Vanessa Coles. I know Vanessa is on the call with us. Rico Dancy.
This is Vanessa, can you hear me?
Yes, Vanessa, thank you. Okay. I do know that Rico is on the call with us. We do have interpreters for him. Melanie Jackson.
Present.
Thank you. Mary Kay McMahon.
Here.
Thank you. Philippa Mazel. Anthony Oberg.
Here.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Summerford.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simona. All right, that concludes our roll call for today's meeting. Now I will read today's meeting agenda, and the agenda for our AAC meeting is as follows. We just went through the call to order and introductions of the committee members by taking the roll call. Afterwards, we will have approval of agenda, prior meeting minutes, and the board report. Dr. Posner will lead that. At 5:40, we do have our general manager, Paul Wiederfeld. He'll be joining us. At 6:10, Ms. Terian Williams-Hall will present DriveCam services. She'll give an update on that. At 6:30, we will have Hettinger Awards process. 6:50, we have public comment section. 7:10, bus and rail subcommittee meeting report. 7:20, Metro Access subcommittee report. And at 7:30, the meeting will adjourn. That was the agenda for today's AAC meeting. And I see Philippa is joining. At this time, I would ask Chair Posner to move the meeting forward. Chair Posner, you have the floor.
Yep. Good evening. Glad everybody can make it. It's going to be a busy meeting this evening. What I'll do for the approvals is ask if there are any non-approvals, and if there aren't, then we'll take them as being accepted. So I'll ask for an approval of the agenda. And if I don't hear any disapprovals, I'll assume the agenda that we heard is okay. The only thing that I'm going to add to that is take a few minutes to talk about the replacement for Charlie Crawford. We've had a committee look at replacements, and we'll give you a report on where we are on that. Hopefully, we've all had a chance to read the prior meeting minutes, and if anybody has anything to add to those minutes, please speak up now. If not, can I have a motion and a second to approve the minutes as they stand?
So moved.
I'll second.
All in favor? Excuse me, all opposed. Not hearing any opposition, we'll accept the minutes as they're presented. The board report that you all received is draft of the board report because, as always, I'll probably add something after we have this evening's meeting because we're going to be discussing some things, particularly Charlie's replacement. So once again, I'll ask for a motion for acceptance of the draft.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Anyone opposed? Hearing no opposition, we'll have it accepted. And Mr. Wiedefeld has appeared. And before I introduce him, I'll remind everybody that hopefully you've had an opportunity to take a look at the budget and take some time to go over the YouTube presentations that occurred last Friday. And after Mr. Wiedefeld's presentation, we'll have some questions, and I'll ask everybody to ask questions rather than make speeches. And limit your first go around to 2 minutes, and that way we'll get everything done in a good time. And Mr. Wiedefeld has just taken a chug and he's ready to go. The floor is yours.
Good evening, Phil. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, no problem for me.
Okay, thank you so much. And I apologize for not making the last meeting. I forget, I know something came out of the blue. I apologize for that. I know that, I believe the chairman attended my stay, so that was probably even better. So thank you. Let me just, again, thank you all for everything that you do in your role that you play. And also, I hope that you and your families have all been safe during these terrible times that we're all in. What I thought I would do is go through the fiscal year 21 budget first. I think we need to set some context, and then I'll go through the fiscal year 22 budget. So the fiscal year 21 budget, which is for us, ends in June. we were fortunate that the COVID dollars that we've been getting can be stretched a little bit further to basically February. But it still leaves us with a $176 million hole in the budget. We did public hearings. We're able to bring back some things that initially thought we would have to cut. One of them being rail service until 11 p.m. We thought we were going to have to pull that back to 9 p.m. during this current fiscal year. But fortunately, we were able to do that. Unfortunately, though, we can only provide roughly 75% of the bus service we currently pre-pandemic levels of service compared to pre-pandemic levels, and 50% of the rail service. And more importantly, it means we need to come up with roughly 1,400 positions, basically the financial support for 1,400 positions. So we're trying to do that as best we can by not taking people out of active positions, using, for instance, a retirement incentive program, trying not to fill any vacancies, wherever we don't have to do that, and trying to minimize the actual impact on individuals. Unfortunately, right now, though, we have the retirement program. We'll know by the 15th of this month how many people have taken part of that. And after that, we'll know exactly how many positions we'll have to eliminate where people are currently filling them. So nothing that we want to do, obviously, from a service perspective, but more importantly for our employees to do that. So then, so that was approved, that budget was approved, and now we're all hoping that we get something with the federal, with some federal dollars in the short term. We do not anticipate anything from the fare box catching us up to that level of $176 million is the reality for the next 6 months. For fiscal year 22, we're actually a month behind in that process already. But we have done some estimates of what we are projecting for that. And I'm sure you read, and I know Phil sent the materials out early. That is, very, very difficult situation for us. It leaves us with roughly about a $500 million hole, $500 million hole in the budget. You know, just almost a quarter of our total budget. So it's really, really tough. So unfortunately, we had to put out some things to try to address that. Our first call was to see again internally what could we do to reduce costs. As you may know, we've been reducing costs for a number of years. We eliminated a number of positions about 4 years ago. If you recall, about 800 positions. We've been trying to be as efficient as we can. So there's not much there, to be frank, but we are not going to give raises to our employees again for another year. And we will continue to look for other means to reduce costs. We've committed to roughly $56 million of that $500 million hole we got to fill, basically internally. And again, there's just not much there to go after, to be frank. The other thing we tried to do was I worked with Tom Webster. I'm sure you may know him. He's the head of our capital program development. And I asked him if there was anything from the capital program that we could do to basically use for operating costs, again, to reduce the impact on service and on the reduction of the workforce. There's limitations of what you can do there. I mean, some of the funds literally cannot be used for operating. Federal money can't, or certain federal monies can't, and then the dedicated funding revenues can't. And then also the debt that supports that. I mean, that's how we're delivering the capital program. It's to support the bonds that we sold. So, but with that, we have identified roughly a quarter billion, $250 million of that capital program that in effect we will be doing operating preventive maintenance work that normally would be funded out of the operating budget in the capital budget. Historically, the board has allowed us to do that on a very limited basis, roughly $60 million per year. This current 21, they did allow us to increase that to 90 million. And now we're asking them to increase it to 250 million. And the reason they don't want to do it and the reason that we don't do it is because that eats up the dollars that we need to invest in the very large capital improvements that we need to do of state of good repair and safety. So it's, you know, where we're repairing platforms and things like that. The more you take away and you're doing, you know, more of the ongoing preventive maintenance, the less it leaves for that. And so we don't want to dig a hole like we've had in the past on the capital program. So after doing those two things, really the only thing left for us, unfortunately, is service. So you may have seen on the rail side, what that means is we would run roughly about 20% of the normal service we provide, pre-COVID service we provide, stopping service at 9 p.m., not performing weekend service, shutting down 19 stations, and running from terminus 30-minute headways. Obviously, we're in the core where we share tracks. There will be 15-minute headways, but a 30-minute headway. Very, very difficult. On the bus side, we have obviously seen ridership there. Basically, the rail side's been moving. We've lost about 90%, almost 90% of our ridership. And on the bus side, we've lost almost 60% of our ridership. But it is significant, the number of people that were still moving there. So what we're proposing is that we would provide 45% of pre-COVID levels of bus service. Again, nothing that we want to do. It's very difficult. There's no way to do this without hurting people. I mean, there's no way that we can provide that level of service and not impact people that need to get around in some fashion. But if the dollars aren't there, that's all that we can do. So what we've tried to do is take a look at those lines that are moving the most people and try to protect them as much as we could. Those lines that aren't are some of the ones that we've suggested that they be eliminated temporarily, hopefully till this is all solved financially. We also try to backfill on the weekends, since we won't be running rail service, to provide bus service there. So that's what we have in front of the board to go out to public hearing for this Thursday. That'll be a policy decision by the board. What I have suggested to the board is, just like we did in 21, it's much easier to bring service back than to basically go through the budget process and then have to go back out and cut even further. We have a lot of process requirements that are good that we should follow. One is to get the public's input. What is it, you know, that we can hear from them? What can we adjust? And that takes a lot of time. It takes time to prepare the materials so we can educate people what's out there and then take their input and then digest it and come back to the board. It's also, we need to do Title VI analysis, basically the impact it has on different parts of the community. And then if we go to layoffs, which unfortunately in this 22 budget calls for an additional 2,400 layoffs, if we do that under our current collective bargaining agreements with our different unions, we need to provide them 60 days of notice. So when you start to walk backwards, the schedule gets fairly tight. Two other things that are driving the schedule. One is for the federal dollars that we get, those grants need to be in by April. And for our local and state budgeting people, or the local and state budgeting processes that they're going through, they need to understand how much money they need to come up with. So all those are driving, you know, how much what we're putting out there to the public to respond to. And then we'll get back to the board and seek approval sometime in March for the budget. So that's it very quickly. I'm sorry, it's complicated, but I thought it'd be good for you to understand sort of the context of what we're up against. And I can, there's nothing worse, you know, than what we're dealing with now. None of us want to do this. This is not what we do. This is not our profession. You know, our profession is to provide service to people, you know, that need it, and for the community. And unfortunately, the finances just aren't there yet. So we are doing everything we can to try to get the federal government to basically bridge us for the time being, to get us through this, like other transit properties around the country, because we only have one other source, right? It's the fare box, or it's the local and state governments. The local and state governments are under tremendous stress, financial stress, and their fare box just isn't there because of the lack of ridership. So with that, Phil, I'd be glad to take any questions or comments that you might have, or anyone else on the committee.
Well, super. I'll just ask people to raise their hands, and then Anu will recognize you for 2 minutes. Let me ask you, when you ask your questions, understand there's questions based on the 2021 budget, which we are in right now through June 31st, and questions on the 2022 budget, which starts on July the 1st. And so that people don't get confused, let us know which one you're asking a question about. And, you know, please ask a question, not make a speech. So, Anu, are you watching for hands?
Yes, I am. And we have Paul. Paul, do you want to go ahead and unmute yourself? Go ahead.
Sure. So everyone can hear me, right?
Yes, go ahead.
Yep. As you know, I'm the Metro Access Subcommittee Chair. And from what I understand right now, and it's been reiterated since I did the last public hearing online, is that Metro Access service area or times of travel will not be touched until the end of the fiscal year next year, if I'm correct. But I'm just saying, given how this is rolling financially and things possibly can change, all I advocate and ask for the customers is that if you're going to change any of service areas due to the financial constraints or times for Metro Access, that please let customers know far well in advance if it's going to be done anytime well before that. Like if y'all decide, oh, January 1st, we really need to change things, even though y'all said at the end of the fiscal year for the end of June, just let customers know far in advance so they can plan their transportation options accordingly.
Paul, of course, we will. And again, I don't anticipate that, and I'm not going to recommend it. I think it's important that we keep that service where it is right now.
Okay, thank you.
And who's next?
Okay, so Dr. Posner, we can go through the members first, and then we can take comments from and questions from the members of the public. So next member would be Patrick Sheehan. Patrick, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, sir, for your presentation. Appreciate it. Yes, I'm trying to figure out. I've been listening like everybody else to the news, looking at looking to put together as far as CARES 2 or whatever we're calling this. Package of 45 billion, of which MATA might get its share. Would that be applying to the shortfall on 21 or applying to the 22 budget?
Yeah, let me just clarify a little bit for you, Patrick, and thank you for the question.
Yes, thank you.
One is the 45 billion is for all transportation, all modes. Of that, $15 billion in the proposal, in the compromise bill that's being discussed right now in the Senate, $15 billion of that would go for transit. Okay, so that's that would not be, the transit is identified over, meaning transit across the country, has identified over $30 billion, $32 billion actually, that they estimate they need. So it depends, Patrick, on when we get it and what limitations are put on it. So if something were to occur in the near term, meaning in the next few weeks, which, you know, could play out, is, you know, the way this the discussion is, then we would try to do as much as we could to bring back those employees in 21 and to protect that service as much as we could. But it'll depend on how much, and again, when it flows. If for some reason, you know, it doesn't flow until April, then that doesn't help me, right? Because I've run out of money in February. We run out of money in February in the 21 budget. And then, you know, the discussion that you know, we're all following is, it's generally viewed as, this is sort of the stopgap on a number of levels, not just for transit. This is the stopgap to get to the new administration and the new Congress to work through whatever they're going to work through. So we're all very hopeful that that does occur, and it provides some immediate relief in the 21 budget. So the current budget we're in for the next 6 months. But until we see, you know, what that really looks like, and then whatever requirements, you know, I just don't know what requirements, no one does, what type of requirements may be put in those dollars, you know, where you can use it, how you can use it. You know, a lot of things get added to, as you know, legislation at the last minute. But hopefully, if it's something very similar to the CARES Act, we would be able to use it fairly quickly.
Thank you. Anil, who's next?
Mary Kay, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Good evening. Thank you for being here. I live in the district, and I just had two questions pertaining to FY22. One, is there concern about a situation occurring that we kind of saw earlier this year, where there was less bus service, but it didn't meet demand? It made for more crowded buses, which presumably would be more dangerous under the current circumstances. Mm-hmm. And the other question was just a process question. I noticed in the FY22 budget that it looked like the subsidy from DC was higher than from either one of the other jurisdictions. And I wondered if that was standard. That just struck me as odd.
Okay. Let me just hit the second one first. The subsidies from every jurisdiction, it's based on a formula. It's based on levels of service and population, a number of things that do that. So that formula has been established by the jurisdictions. So that number reflects, you know, sort of it's literally the formula that's been in place for years. So that you'll see that number, you know, change a little bit. You're going to see it with the Silver Line Phase 2, because if you look, you also saw Loudoun County's, their number goes up obviously quite a bit, because they're getting six new stations, right? Silver Line 2 adds six stations, which changes the whole formula, and now it gets distributed. And then Loudoun County has two stations, so they actually come in and pay money. So you'll see there's a lot of adjustments because of the Silver Line Phase 2. In terms of your first question, the reality is, unfortunately, that, and this is a big concern of ours, particularly with social distancing, is that we will see, you know, more crowded trains and buses, most likely, particularly on the bus side, because there just isn't enough dollars to put out as many buses as we would like. So what we've tried to do is focus on those lines that have the greatest usage. So when I talk about the system being at 45% of what a pre-COVID system would look like, it doesn't mean that every line will go down by 55%, right? What it means is we're gonna distribute those dollars as best we can to meet demand. So there may be lines that basically don't have a cut, right? Because basically they're in such demand, we're not going to cut them from where they are today. But there's others where there's lower demand that we're going to unfortunately have to cut because there just isn't enough dollars to spread around. So we're very concerned about the crowding and the implications of that. But all we can do is use the dollars we have and the best that we can. One thing, though, that is different is, and we'll see how this plays out, is we've been, as you know, we've been using backdoor boarding only. We moved, the board has made the decision to start collecting revenues in January. And that means the front door opening and that we obviously have shields for our bus operators. But as that occurs, because what we notice is ridership is up quite a bit because a lot of people can just take very short trips. Whereas, you know, historically, if you were paying, maybe you wouldn't take that short trip. You know, you walk or whatever you might do. So that may go down a little bit in terms of the pressure on the buses. But to be frank, when you're only running that level of service, it will be very difficult, you know, for crowding or at times on the system. But also, it's also what we notice is just the time of day has shifted too, as well as, you know, the what traditional peak is has spread out a little bit, just given, again, what's happening in the local economy as well. Mary Kat, I'm just, this is not something we want to do. It is not something we want to do. That's why if we can get this federal dollars, we can, you know, back away from such terrible decisions that have to be made.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then next?
Next is Vanessa. Vanessa, go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, hi. You may have answered my question. It was regarding Ability Ones, but you mentioned the CARES program. Could you repeat what you said about that?
About the fares coming back?
The CARES Act.
The current CARES Act, which was approved, you know, in the spring, basically those dollars, we have gone through those dollars over the last few months to basically provide service and keep people employed, because that was one of the criteria of that CARES Act, was that you wouldn't be laying off people if we're giving you this money. So we did that. But those dollars run out in about right around mid-February. Literally, you know, we're monitoring the dollars day to day, but it's basically in that time frame. So once that occurs, we don't have the dollars to provide the level of service we're providing today. And that's why the shifts occur in mid-February. They're not as dramatic as the fiscal year 22, meaning the July 1, the service changes there that are that will go out to public hearing in the near future, but they still, we will not be able to do what we were doing in the past.
So then, is it safe to say that the Abilities One and that CAB program will not be provided for until possibly after June?
Most likely not then either, because what we're trying to do is maximize those contractors that we have in place that provide, you know, what's obviously required under federal law and which serves, you know, a good portion of the population. We've tried to manage that as best we can to keep trips as short as we can, or keep as few people on, you know, as you know, in a van at one time and all that. But we want to keep that contractor in place because as things start to come back, we want to bring that up very quickly. So that is the current plan to do that right now. And that's why the Abilities Ride, we pulled back from that some right now because literally we can't afford both.
Right. I understand. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Who next?
Okay. Elmer has emailed me his questions, which I will read. Elver writes, due to maybe budget restrictions and or less ridership, why do I see less Metro Police riding Metro and or walking as it was before? People smoking on platforms and inside Metro cars is increasing. Messy elevators and continue being used as public bathrooms more than ever. His follow-up question is as follows, and this is again Elver's question. He wrote, I ride Metro when essential, but I feel more intimidating now that I don't see Metro Police around and cars with less riders.
Okay. I will reinforce that with the police chief to make sure if that's, you know, I will look into that. I know that basically we still do have them out there quite a bit. You know, it depends where you are, obviously, whether you see them or not. But I will reinforce that with our police chief to make sure that they're out there doing everything they can to look at those, particularly some of those nuisance things that we all, you know, we all hate. You know, when you see these things, we have to experience them. So I will follow up on that directly.
Thank you, Mr. Peterful. And if Elver is not connected at the moment, I will email him your responses so that he's aware of it. Next, we have Kelly Simono. Kelly, go ahead and ask your question.
Hi there. I have two questions, one related to Metro Access and one related to bus and rail. First, for Metro Access, obviously not taking any cuts of service is wonderful, but understanding that WMATA is facing, you know, significant personnel restrictions and layoffs, have y'all thought through about how personnel may be impacted through the Metro Access program? And then along with that, what kind of assurances can the disability community have that proper training and policies are being upheld even during this restricted time? Mm-hmm. And then I do have a bus and rail question I'll ask next.
Okay, just on that one, I mean, you know, Christian Blake does a great job of making sure that the contractor performs to what they're to perform to. I think in the 21, I think we're in good shape going forward on Metro Access. I think in 22, you know, the goal is to protect it as much as possible. So that's what we'll continue to do. Obviously, there's a requirement at, you know, one level, but I think we go beyond that in a number of ways. And I want to continue to try to do that because it's such an important service for our community.
And so I guess, does that mean that you don't anticipate making any personnel cuts within the Metro Access drivers at this time?
Not at this time. Again, that's why we're not doing the abilities program. We're moving towards that to try to protect that. Again, as you mentioned, you know, when you start to lose some of those people, it's hard to get them back and train, get them, you know, to the level that we want them. So we don't want to dig that hole. We can help it.
Yeah, certainly. The second question with bus and rail is obviously shutting down 19 stations is a significant move. And as such, like, it's kind of shifts people's ability to move around the various areas of the DMV. And so have y'all looked and studied how like accessibility plays in as far as bus routes that need to connect people to rails?
Yes. In fact, that is part of this is again for the 22 budget now.
Yes.
Yeah. So no, in fact, the bus plan that we're coming out with is addressing that to where we can. But some of these stations, so for instance, Judiciary and Gallery, yes, there is it is a little bit further, but they're so close, right, that there's an opportunity there to save some dollars. And when I say save dollars, I'm coming at it from saving jobs. You know, I really am. Like, how can I prevent losing people? But so that's one way. And then some of them serve literally shopping malls that just aren't, you know, they aren't doing the volume, right, that warrants it, given all the other 90, you know, the full 91 stations. Where can we save some dollars as best we can with the minimum impact? But again, I cannot, you know, every one of these cuts does hurt. There's just no doubt about it. It does. Mm-hmm. Because that's what we do, right? We provide the service. So if we don't provide it, it's going to hurt someone. So we're just trying to minimize that pain as much as we can.
From a logistical perspective, are y'all, the stations that are closed, like for example, East Falls Church, that's where I usually was commuting when I was going into DC, but now it'll be closed. Are y'all doing shuttle service or when it, you mean like shut down? Is it just, you know, you need to find your bus route and get to West Falls Church or Ballston or wherever you may go to kind of redirect yourself?
It'll vary. Again, that's why it really depends. So like running a shuttle necessarily from Gallery Place to Judiciary maybe doesn't make as much sense. But at some of these other stations, there may be bus service that tries to supplement the closed station.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then next.
Next is Steve. Steve, go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Steve.
Yeah, I saw on YouTube your finance committee testimony last week, and I looked particularly at the criteria, the three criteria that you stated for consideration of determining the status of various bus routes. And my question is, before that review is made or ultimately needs to be made, if we're aware of particular situations that either are duplications at this point in time or were based upon prior studies that relating to work habits or work needs or express or local considerations that are no longer applicable and in the next few years will continue to not be, is there a place other than customer service that we can contact to be as financially prudent as we can?
Yeah, oh, definitely, Steve. I mean, if the board approves the proposed 22 budget next week or this week, sorry, Thursday, then we would put it out for a public docket and then look for basically exactly that, where everyone can weigh in. Remember, these cuts would not take effect till July. So there is a lot of time to basically work through what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. And at the same time, you know, things will be changing around us, right? That's one thing we can all sort of agree on is that, so what happens in on the federal side, what happens with ridership, what happens with the vaccine, what happens with COVID, all those things constantly are, as you know, changing around us. So, you know, our hope is that it changes for the better and we don't have to do those things that we've talked about starting in July. But also we can't assume that everything falls our way, right? And just, you know, go along our merry way and then and not be able to deliver. So, and I also, if you listened in, you know, to me, this is, you know, at a personal level, when you think of roughly losing, you know, almost a third of your workforce, I need to do everything I can to help those people, A, understand what their future is, right? So they can make their own decisions and do what they do and try to prevent that. So that's why I'm focusing so much on the jobs part. Jobs, in our case, jobs means service, but it's really got to be about what can we do to protect the jobs, meaning how can we get riders back? Can we get some federal money? Let's you know, do everything we can to support getting the vaccine out there. Is there anything we can do, for instance? So it's all around that. Because at the end of the day, if I can save jobs, I'm saving service. And I think it's only fair and, you know, to let our people know as soon as we can and what it looks like, to be transparent about it. It's very difficult, but I think it's disservice to basically not let them know what's going on. And then, you know, unfortunately then having to do something where there's no time for them to react, to adjust and all that. I just think it's just a terrible situation for all of us, to be frank.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Next, we have Anthony. Anthony, go ahead and ask a question.
Hi, this is Anthony. I just, to go off of what Kelly was talking about from an accessibility standpoint, you were just mentioning that if the cuts happen in the 22 budget, they wouldn't happen until July. So there's a lot that could happen in between there. In that intervening time, say you have to cut the weekend service, is there a sort of plan in place to check what bus routes are available in terms of accessibility? Not all drop-off points, you know, in every sort of jurisdiction are on good sidewalks, have curb cuts, that sort of thing. So I'm just curious if there is any sort of plan in place for in the intervening time, say we get to that point, right. You know, how can we ensure that the bus routes are accessible?
Yeah, Anthony, I really don't think we will get there. I mean, you know, the budget that we put out there, I mean, we've took a $176 million hit. And with that, we're still providing 75% of the bus service. So I don't anticipate that coming down at all between now and July 1. So I wouldn't be as concerned about that. I just don't think we're gonna get there. I mean, unless something dramatic changes, right? Who knows? But just with everything that we all see in terms of where the virus is, where the vaccine is, where we know financially where we are. So as things play out, if they keep playing out the way that they're playing out, I think we'll be fine. You know, gosh forbid that something terrible happens. You know, that's totally different. But if that happens, we're all in a different place at that point. But I just don't anticipate that. I really don't. I don't anticipate that at all.
I think that was the last of our committee members.
Yes.
I'd like to ask one question before we go to the public, because I just had my internet bounce off because we're having winds here. And I'm optimistic about a CARES Act type package coming out before New Year's and a new one with the new administration. But we will have time until July, and I wondered whether you're looking into some of the jurisdiction programs like Montgomery County's microbus and the DC R2R, and also having private companies do some of the shuttling. I think primarily of the hospitals where their workers are on very strange schedules and have some way to get them to one of the active bus routes. And since you have until July to get that going, I wonder if you have started doing that yet.
Yeah, thank you, Phil. Yes, in fact, we have. But one of the things that the local governments have basically asked us is, look, we need to understand what you're talking about in terms of what your service you're pulling down so that they can look at their services and how they can adjust it. In fact, I just had this conversation last week with Montgomery County. So that's what they'll do now, basically, because now we've laid out, you know, all the different cuts that we see necessary. And now we'll go back and forth, right, with everyone to see, all right, what can we do? A, what adjustments can we make? And B, what other resources can be brought to the table? In terms of having someone private provide it, at the end of the day, that it's still money, right? There's no way we can do that. And there's just contractually, I wouldn't do it, right? I can't take service away from people that are providing it today that are Metro employees and then backfill with private sector.
Well, I was thinking of having the private companies provide their own shuttles.
Oh, I see.
Right, okay. The ones that are all at Tyson's where their private shuttles pick people up. The NSF did that during the shutdowns for their people. So not to have WMATA do it, but have WMATA talk to them about setting something up for them. On the layoffs, versus furloughs. The one question I had is whether there's any way they can keep their health care, because that's a major problem when people are laid off. And then on the other side, when you decide to rehire, will personnel have to go through the regular long rigmarole to rehire, or can you say, oh, you were furloughed and you can come back into your position? Because I remember how difficult it is to fill positions.
Yeah, no, and I apologize for misunderstanding your question. You're right, exactly right. On the private sector, in effect, backfilling on their own, yes, but it's the same thing. They need to understand what the potential cuts are so that they can start to do that. So the quicker we get information out there and start that whole debate, I think is important. In terms of the layoffs, yeah, under the different collective bargaining agreements we have, they're the first back in. So they get to come right back in. So that's not an issue. Now, whether or not they are still available is a different issue. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, if you're facing this, I mean, you have to deal with your own personal finances. You may move on. You can't wait. And you may do better. You may like the different job. Who knows, right? You may move. All right. So we don't know what any of that will be. So that will be one issue. The other is a lot of our positions, you can't just leave and come back in 2 months, 3 months, 5 months, 6 months, and just jump back in the seat or get right back into maintenance, even in some of the maintenance positions. So that will take some potential recertification in some cases, retraining in some cases. So that's something, and it's something we do right now. If someone leaves, you know, for any type of, you know, if they take FMLA for a protracted period, they have to go through a certain, you know, period to come back in. They're there, which is good. We can hire them and bring them back and start, you know, training them again, but you just can't put them right back into work. So that's going to be, particularly the scale that we're talking about, if we lose a third of our employees, that will be quite an effort to basically build them back up to get to the back to the 100% for sure.
Great, thank you. And then I'll let you go to the general public now.
Okay, so we have Barbara Melville.
Thank you, Paul, for your leadership during these stressful times. Really, really feel for you and your top management. My question pertains to the proposed eliminating bus lines. Do you have any thought of giving the jurisdictions the riders who are riding the on those lines that are now going to be canceled, have you thought about giving them, having the jurisdictions give them rideshare coupons or similar to get them to the rail station where they can take that to their final destination if that happens to be where it is, and make them whole too? Because what's going on is there's people with disabilities who don't have, I guess in this case, they don't have metro access, and maybe they can't walk the mile to the rail station that's open. And you could come up with a whole lot of scenarios like that, but they really can't move either, because it's you know, whatever, you're giving them like 3 months notice. And then how do you know they moved? That bus route's going to be kept. So it's very stressful on that end, and I appreciate your considering that.
No, thank you, Barbara. And we will. I mean, that's again one of the reasons we want to get the information out as quick as we can and get that debate going. The only thing I would caution is, they are under tremendous stress too, right? Financial stress. So they're going to have to do the same thing we're doing, is they've got to, determine the best way to use their resources. You know, as you may know, that a lot of the local transit properties also receive CARES money, right? So I'm not sure where, I don't follow all their finances, but either some of them have burned through that money or are about to. So that will come into play as well. So they're hoping, obviously, to get additional federal money, which would help them boost up. If that occurs, I think there's less of an issue there. But if we have to pull down service, I'm assuming they're under tremendous pressure at the same time, because again, they're dealing with, they're competing against a lot of other county needs that they have in their individual county or town. But we will work with them.
From the big picture, you're saving that whole bus line from going out every day, and then you just need to help those people, those few people, like say in the McLean rail station, there's probably like 300 riders per day that enter and exit there, is what I read, I believe, and just get them on a ride share, to the next closest station, and you're still going to be ahead monetarily, in my opinion.
Right, right. No, I agree. But again, I think we all need to work through the details, listen to people, see where we can, maximize, again, across the board, like Phil mentioned, even let the private sector, where they can, backfill some of this for their own purposes. That's great too. So I think, my hope, Barbara, is that this is all a exercise that we can all pull back from very quickly.
I do too. Thank you for coming tonight.
Yep, you're welcome.
Thank you, Anu. I think we're up to Mr. Torres.
Yes, and he's our last person asking questions for this topic. Mr. Torres, go ahead, please.
Yes, hello, good afternoon, good evening. Thanks for coming by, Mr. Wiedefeld. I have a lot of concerns about what I'm hearing here this evening and what I have been experiencing throughout the time that I have been spending attending these AAC meetings. WMATA is going through a major budget crunch because of the crisis, but yet there is a $5 million expenditure going to be made in a bit of a rush to purchase sedans. So if we are so much out of money, why are we spending $5 million on sedans that we don't seem to need right now, because there are a lot of vehicles that are not being used because the demand is low. And another concern is that, and this has been something that has been discussed very heavily here at these meetings, the AAC is intended or was established to provide advice to WMATA on disability issues. On the procurement of the sedans, you actually have a situation where on February 26th, WMATA is telling potential bidders that they do not have to make their sedans or provide sedans that are ADA compliant. One of the specifications that the AAC recommended was that the sedan be that the sedan door have a 90 degree angle to provide maximum number of disabled people to use the vehicle. Yet on that date, that 26th of February, WMATA is telling their contractors, oh no, that 90 degree is no longer required. But yet on October 19th, Department of Access Services is telling us, oh, well, we put it out in the bid that the contract needs to have near 90 degree. So why on the 26th, you're telling the potential bidders for this, no, you don't have to have a 90 degree, but yet on the 19th, you're telling us in the disabled community, oh yeah, we asked them for near 90 degree. Never mind the car that we ended up with doesn't have that. And that is causing me a lot of distress. One other thing that's causing me a lot of distress, there are a lot of situations that I'm seeing where 508 adherence is very lacking at WMATA. I'm sure you probably remember the budget fiasco where we did not have documents that were accessible by people who are blind. And, you know, it had to be a last minute thing that we were provided the budget that was accessible. And then I'm hearing in your presentation this evening, unless I missed something, I am not hearing much mention or any mention. Well, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't hear you mention anything about Metro Access in your presentation. And that, to me, if that is what I actually heard, I stand to be corrected. It tells me that, you know, now I understand why on the WMATA homepage, the disabled, Metro Access, none of this is mentioned on the homepage. Tourists are mentioned, rail is mentioned, bus is mentioned, but Metro Access is not mentioned. I'm sorry, as a disabled person, I'm feeling at WMATA, we're a stepchild and our issues are not being put at the forefront. How do we address this? Okay. Thank you.
Sure, thank you for the question. I can assure you that there's no thought of a stepchild here. That is just not correct. In terms of not seeing anything on Metro Access, it's because there's nothing proposed to change. So that's why you're not seeing anything there. If we were going to change something, it would be there. So that's why you're not seeing that. In terms of why the capital expenditures are still going on, there's two things. One is that the funding source may only allow you to do capital. And the other is we also need to think about, even though we're dealing with some of these issues now, we also have long-term needs that we have to address. So we are continuing to do a number of things on the capital side, and we'll continue to do that. In terms of the vehicles themselves, that is, you know, that's part of a procurement process. As we put out procurements, you know, there are certain things that we have to do to make sure that we can get competition. We can't steer a particular contract towards a particular vendor. That is just not something that we can do. And so that is, you know, how we, and this is, you know, like you mentioned, an active contract, and that's how we framed it. So anyway, that's my view on those three points that you've raised. So thank you, sir.
Well, sir, can I just have a follow-up, please? Essentially what went on here, there's only one bidder is what I'm hearing. And that's a major concern. So there's no real active competition going on for this bid. And that is a very big concern to me.
Mr. Torres, if I can interpret your question, because it's a question that we've asked before, and that was the process that was followed of having the RFP changed in the middle of the process because there were no initial bids. And the reason there were no initial bids is none of the dealerships that would sell sedans wanted to do all of the upfitting on the cars. And so rather than splitting it out as a bid for sedans and a bid for upfitting, they kept it together. And so they wound up with only a single bid, which they gave, which was a car that doesn't meet the original standards. And so that was the question that the AAC has asked, why it would be an investigation of the process that was followed. And we don't expect you to answer that tonight, other than to say, well, we're looking into the process and find out why they did in fact say there were no bids, instead of asking why there were no bids and fixing the bid, they changed the RFP so that someone would get something that wasn't quite as good as the initial one. So I think that's what Mr. Torres was talking about.
I understand. I understand, Phil. Thank you. But yes, we'll look at the process. But I think, you know, that's we have to be, you know, we have to be very clear in our bidding. We cannot be presenting bids out there that look like they're steered towards any individual firm or person. So we're very sensitive to that. I think it's you know, using the dollars as best we can, and not you know, being trying to funnel dollars in a certain direction. That's just not acceptable.
But if at the end of the day we end up with one bid, isn't that in effect what is happening?
There are contracts where we do only get one bid at times. I mean, it does occur. We want competition. The competition is much for the price. But sometimes there are certain vendors where you just don't have that many vendors, or vendors choose not to bid for lots of reasons. And that's their individual decision. I can't, we can't do much about that.
Thank you. Thank you for all the time you spent in answering the questions. One bit of advice I would give in getting information to the public, because you've been great tonight, the YouTube was great, but I spend a lot of time, and I know the RAC meeting that we attended on Tuesday, they have spent a lot of time in the grocery store with constituents and for people in the neighborhood and people with their groups that are confused about the 2021 and 2022 budgets, what the cuts are, what's covered, and what the dates are. And I think it would be wonderful if the information could go out on some of the newspapers, the morning talk shows, the RFPs like Wake Up DC or Good Morning Washington or what have you, because we do get a lot of input from people and it's simply confusion. And you guys are doing a great job and you need to take credit and get credit for the good job that you're doing. So that's one request I have.
That's good, Phil. I mean, we'll try harder to get the word out. Unfortunately, right now with all the uncertainty, I understand where there'd be confusion, to be frank, because there's so many things that are changing around us right now. So, but yes, we can do a better job of that for sure.
Yeah, no, Lynn Bowersox is really good at getting stuff out, and I'm sure she'll continue to do it. It's more some of the news media and some of the articles that we've read that you don't need to be as scared as they're making people, or as frightened as they're making people. No. I know, no lead, no lead. Well, right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you to the entire committee. Thank you so much for your participation and all you do for Metro. So thank you so much.
And please come back again when things are doing really well.
Okay. Have a good holiday season, all. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bill, this is Pat Sheehan. Could I say one thing?
Go for it.
And correct me if I get the wrong time frame, but I think according to what the RAC talked about last week, they were looking at hearings, what was it, proposed around the 9th or so of February, about 10 hearings that they was looking at putting during that week-long time frame. Does that ring a bell?
Patrick, this is Paul Wiedefeld. It would be sometime after inaugural.
Okay.
So we have to define that yet. We haven't nailed all that down yet. I'm sure people are, you know, they're working through what makes sense at lots of levels. But we don't want to do anything, obviously, over the holidays. The inaugural is going to take up a lot of, as you can imagine, a lot of time and energy, a lot of people. And so we'll you know, but it'll be shortly thereafter. But the details will be given. But first, until the board approves it, it's not real anymore until we know Thursday where they sit.
Moot point, right. I get that. Yes, good. Thank you.
This again to Patrick. I'll send you the link and you can watch it.
Thank you so much, all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're on to Drive Cam Services update. Darianne, thank you for being patient.
Absolutely, thank you. Good evening, everyone. As a part of our ongoing efforts to enhance the safety and security of our service, starting January 1, 2021, all Metro Access vans will be equipped with full in-service audio and video recording. As you are most likely aware, this is an upgrade to the existing service. Today, we provide video clips that are triggered by driving actions like collisions, speeding, hard braking, or a sudden swerve. We use those clips to identify unsafe driving behaviors. Those clips help Metro Access contractors proactively coach their operators to improve their skills before collisions occur, and they've been the bedrock of our safety program. The new service that I'm sharing with you tonight is called Live Video Streaming. Features enhance existing benefits and improve safety. Now there are two cameras on each vehicle, one facing the road and one facing the inside of the vehicle. The system also captures audio, speed, and vehicle location. Now these features are being implemented to further protect passengers, operators, and Metro from fraudulent adverse driver claims and from passenger or driver misconduct. We're in the process of upgrading the vehicles, and after tonight's meeting, we will initiate a comprehensive customer communications plan to include web updates, IVR messages, and e-alerts. So I will take your questions about that change.
Thank you. That's pretty impressive. If we have no hands, I'll start and we'll let Paul go because I'm sure he'll have a question too about that. They will be live streaming constantly or will they have to be turned on? Because some of the problems we've had in the past is the driver hasn't had a chance to flip the camera on when there's been an incident.
So no, they are turned on when the vehicle is turned on. So it's tied directly to the vehicle being in an on status.
Fantastic. Paul?
To be clear, probably at another Metro Access meeting, when this is in place, obviously for safety reasons, customers should be aware or will be made aware that when they step on a Metro Access van, they are being recorded from beginning to end, and that can be brought up for whatever safety reasons it needs to be brought up when issues arise. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So my suggestion to you on top of all the ways you're doing it is also doing that robo call blast when that happens. Because again, there are customers, there's only certain customers that get emails. IVR definitely a good place to do it because that's everywhere everyone has to call in and access. But also in light of recent things that have happened, that robocall, since it goes out to all customers, would be very helpful when it's, done at a strategic time and date to inform them that this is, you will be recorded when you come on. So just, have knowledge of that.
Yes.
Your actions and your behaviors.
We will likely the last week or so before the service goes live, likely have our reservationists include that in their closing script when a customer calls in to make a reservation. And there will also be decals on all of the vehicles. So folks will know when they board that they are being recorded.
Okay. And also, as I look at Ms. Anderson and you, I know this will be also part of the revised customer guide for next year, hopefully.
Absolutely.
Okay, with that, I will leave the questions to other hands.
Thank you. And the stickers, I am sure, are going to be blind accessible with raised lettering, et cetera. Patrick, you were next.
Thank you, Phil. I think perhaps maybe this was already asked in parts, but the code of conduct that will be expected to be observed by the clients will be communicated to them.
So I want to make sure that I understand the question. You're saying the code of conduct that's contained in the customer guide that the customers are provided during their onboarding process through eligibility. You're saying, are we planning to re-communicate that to them?
I think I am, yes.
Okay.
I think that's what I'm saying. In other words, this is a change, and are the... I think we could get into problems if people... if this code of conduct isn't reinforced, perhaps that's a better way to put it, with the customers.
So we've not discussed that. Mr. Blake, I think I want to defer to you on that one, just to see where we are with that. Because we've not changed any of our policies. The policies are posted where they are typically posted in our customer guide and on the website. So I didn't see a need for changing anything. In fact, this is no different than the customers when they ride public transportation, except for the fact, naturally, if they violate a policy, they could temporarily, you know, be suspended or whatever, but we've not had any plans to do that. Chris, I don't know if we need to consider that with our communications.
Well, I think what I'm hearing Patrick say is, what you're saying actually, is that we already have expectations of our customers on Metro Access in terms of their behavior and actions while they're on the vehicle. I think what Patrick may be saying, what I'm understanding, which I agree with, as we're informing our customers about this new feature, perhaps we can reiterate the already established behavioral guidelines just as a friendly reminder.
Yes, please.
And I think that would be a way of addressing what I believe Patrick is saying, but no changes to the existing policy.
No, yes.
Yeah.
And if a customer, for privacy reasons, decides that they do not want to be videotaped or recorded?
Unfortunately, so I'll just tell you, this is something. So I was at the Maryland Transit Administration when we first began recording people on fixed route. In fact, I'm the person who wrote the legislation to establish that. And it was an education process because we had many folks come forward and say that. And we just had to educate the public that when you're riding public transportation, and I may not be saying it out, if we have to, we'll get the lawyers to say it the exact way, because this has been many years ago now. But when you're riding public transportation, there is no legal expectation of privacy.
Okay. So, and that's what I wanted. That's what I thought you'd say.
Yes,
and,
sir. Okay.
And I knew that question would come up, so I thought I'd ask it. Thank you.
Yeah, this is going to come up, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Ms. Rush, do you have any questions or comments about this? And you're on mute. So I assume you have nothing to say. So I guess Mr. Torres has his hand up. He should be the next person. Ms. Torres?
Yes. Hi. My question is sort of similar to Patrick's, but not exactly the same. So there is a privacy concern that I have, not about what Patrick was saying, but having to do with what is the handling or the exposure that a Metro Access rider has to these tapes. In other words, who is watching and who is listening, and is that restricted? And how restricted is it? Is there a restriction policy? And what is, does WMATA or Metro Access have a privacy policy specific? Because we can talk here about, well, there's no, you know, privacy expectation on public transportation, but you need to have a policy that says that explicitly. So that's my question.
Okay. So we are in accordance with Metro's existing policy with regard to CCTV, which is on the Metro buses and on the Metro Rail train. So Metro Access is following those same guidelines.
So Metro has a privacy policy?
They have a policy regarding the use of CCTV, video and audio recording, and that we are not any different or not deviating from that. We're in line with those other modes.
So I guess I'm explicitly asking about a privacy policy, because that is something very specific.
Right. So unfortunately, I don't have those details with me today, but you know, I can certainly look for them in a new, if you could facilitate us getting an answer to that.
after the right meeting. I believe that everybody, I mean, all the companies that use the web and having to do with privacy, they have a privacy policy, and that privacy policy is posted. So now if we are going to be videotaped and recorded, which I don't have a problem with, but I want to know what the privacy policy is explicitly, and I want to know who is watching and listening to my image. Just like at the airports, you can go through the airport and they can scan every part of your body, but there, that is supposed to be restricted to a chosen few.
And if I may jump in, Mr. Torres and Ms. Williams, so, and I think this will be put in writing. I think it'll be better because I have my answer, because I think you've already, I want to say, educated me on the question Mr. Torres yes. is asking. Mm-hmm. If I'm hearing what he's saying correctly, yes, you're going to be on a public, you're going to be in a public transit vehicle, just like you're in a public facility or anything else. And yes, it's going to be recorded, but there are limits to those recordings. You can't just take a video of Mr. Torres on a Metro Access and put them on Facebook, for example.
Right. Thank you. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Right. And Ms. Williams-Hall actually already in Metro Access already has a policy outline following the Metro policy as to what those videos actually can be used for. But instead of me speaking in general and maybe missing something, I think Ms. Williams-Hall is going to be good to put it in writing, if not just share the current policy, mm-hmm. but put it in writing as to if there's a person on a Metro Access van and they're recorded, they should be able to know right offhand, okay, I didn't punch anybody, right. I didn't break anything, so I should have an expectation that video will not be used in some other way. But if I did assault the driver, for example, not that our customers would do that, then I can have a reasonable expectation that that video could be used against me for such an alleged activity. And I think you have that policy.
Yes.
We'll put it in writing.
Yes, I just wanted to be certain that if you're talking about a broader policy beyond the usage of the video by Metro Access, then that would fall under the WMATA policy, and I don't have that available to me today. But we can certainly get that, and we can get that communicated to the board. To keep in mind, our primary purpose for having the recording is for the safety of our riding customers, of the assets themselves, and of the operators. So our intent is not to have the video there for anything other than investigating incidents that are reported up to us. Aside from Metro Access, the only other entity that has access to the videos is going to be our MTPD. So they have access to it. They manage that the same way they do the rest of the video for the other modes of transportation. But we'll be happy to get that in a written format to you, such that you can have all of the particulars.
Great, thank you. Doris, you have your hand up, and this will be the last question on this issue.
I have a couple of questions. One is, are these videos, do they have sound? In other words, where they hear the voices, and thereby would any private information about name or origin and destination addresses be potentially discussed and disclosed? And then I was also wondering. Wait, I have to get my thought for 2 seconds, Phil. It had to do with disclosure. Whether these are videos that are, whether the cameras are on at all times, or are we talking about the ones that are triggered by the driver where there's an incident? Or I think the brakes or something trigger them.
Okay. So the answer to the first question is yes, the service does record both video and audio. To the second question, the service that we have today is event triggered, and that will stay in place until January 1, 2021. January 1, 2021, that's when we will move to full in-service audio and video recording.
Okay, and so then the question that I would have is, if this is considered an analogy to the cameras on Metro Rail, I do not know whether they're on Metro Bus, but on Metro Rail. Do those videos have sound, or are they just photos? I know they've been used when there were crime incidents to good use, you know, for capturing folks, but I think maybe there might be a different purpose here. At least the original reason for having the cameras was a different purpose.
Right. So I do not know for certain if their service has been upgraded to include sound. So I would have to find out about that. We certainly can. And Anu, if you could follow up once we get an answer to that.
Thank you. Okay. Before we get into the Hettinger Award, which is the next thing on the agenda, I'd like to take a moment that Mr. Crawford has left us. And in order to have a replacement from the AFA, we have contacted them and asked them to suggest replacements. The suggestions we asked for were people that would be from the same jurisdiction, which would be Maryland, to someone with a disability and experience with bus, rail, metro access, someone that would be available to attend all of our meetings, as Doris and Charlie have. And they were nice enough to send three names. And we had Paul, Denise, and Patrick, and I went through their resumes. And we unanimously thought that Debbie Fisher, who is a former CEO of the Chai Centers, Inc., and current consultant with great experience with the cognitive community, and lives in Montgomery County, which is where Charlie lived, would be a great representative to the committee. The other two people were very good. We knew all of them in one way or another, from interactions with them in other situations. But the fact that we currently have no cognitive representative to the committee, we thought this was our first choice. We have mobility people, we have vision people, we have hearing people, and our last cognitive person left the committee last year. And so we thought Ms. Fisher would be ideal. And so happy to get any opinions from the rest of the committee, but that was what we had thought. And we just waited approval from the rest of the committee before we asked Mr. Blake to contact AFA and offer the position to her. So floor is open for anybody with input. I see Doris's hand up. Is that still up from before, or do you have something to say about this?
Dr. Pauser, I believe it's from prior. I'll lower her hand.
Okay.
I see Tino's hand up.
Tino?
And then Doris. Oh, Doris does have her question. She just raised her hand again.
Okay, and we have Patrick also. So we'll go Tino, and then Doris, and then Patrick.
Yes.
Yes, can we see bios of the three that you looked at?
Oh, they're not long, so I can read them to you very quickly. I read you Ms. Fisher. The second one is Angela White, resides in DC. Her affiliation is with the MS Society of Greater DC and Maryland, and travels in the region, affords her an understanding of the surrounding jurisdictions. She is a valuable contributor to Access for All and other TPB initiatives. I personally know her through the MS Society, and she is great. The reason I didn't pick her was she doesn't work with cognitive issues and she lives in DC rather than in Maryland. Reverend Syringa was the third and is the current member of Prince George's County Commission for Individuals with Disabilities and will soon be joining the Maryland Department of Disabilities. As an individual who is blind and uses Metro Access, she has a personal understanding and has been an advocate for the transportation needs of people with disabilities for many years. And again, she's great. She is in Maryland, but she's blind. And we have a number of vision-related people on the committee and nobody with the cognitive issue. So those were the three folks that we had, and those were their strong points. They say any one of them would have been fine, but again, seeing the weakness in the committee or the lacking in the committee, we went for cognitive.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. And Doris, you're up next.
Okay, so I think you said Gloria, right, was one of them. She is very good. And has a lot of input to give for Prince George's County, but I didn't hear the third. There was a third person. I heard Debbie, but I didn't hear the third person. I'm sorry. But one thing I wanted to make sure that. So you were saying that they're going to bring the candidates before AHA, right? Because we haven't met all that frequently recently, not as frequently as we have prior.
We're going to go through the protocol for AFA and for us, and Mr. Blake will follow through on it.
Yeah, well, see, we're getting a new chair.
Yes, we
know AFA, that. So, and we haven't met with that new chair yet.
Right. The new chair is the one that suggested the three.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Yeah.
But nonetheless, we haven't.
Well, I understand.
They just went by jurisdiction,
Yeah. We will follow protocol, I promise. All right. Patrick, you're on.
Thank you, Phil. I think that the individual that we have suggested we put forward looks like she's very qualified, has good experience, and I really appreciate the area of disabilities area that she's covering. We don't have that expertise on the committee right now, and so I would really urge this committee to move in that direction so that we can see if we can meet the needs of that population that is critical, and we need to have that expertise on this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Okay.
I second a motion. That's the motion.
Okay. We've had discussion, and we'll do it the old-fashioned way. Anybody objecting? Seeing no objections, anybody abstaining? Seeing no abstentions, I think the motion passes. So I'll ask Mr. Blake to go forward with the communications with the AFA for them to approve it.
Will do.
Thank you. Okay, we're up to the Hettinger Award process. And
let me ask you something, Phil.
Yeah.
Should I have abstained because of potential conflicts of interest until I get to the office vote?
That's up to you.
Chair for advice.
Doris, we've always treated you and Charlie as members of the committee. And so if you would like to abstain, that's fine. If not, we'll take you as an approval.
Well, whatever you all figure out is proper.
Okay. we will do that. Anu, your thoughts on how we go forward on the Hettinger Award. We have the nominations.
Okay. Do you have a nominee?
Oh, I think nominations have all gone forward. And I think you've circulated the nominees to everybody. How are we going to handle the voting? Do we want to have a short speech from the nominators for their particular nominees and then do a vote here, or do we want to do an email vote, or how do we want to handle that?
In the interest of time, if everybody agrees, we can do it via email. I would request everyone to submit their emails in the next couple of days, because we are at 6:55 and we, well, let's see, I have not received any public comments. So if everybody wants to take a minute and make their speech now, we still have some time, we can do that. We have 35 minutes before adjournment.
Okay, right now, as I know, we have Charlie Crawford, and Barbara Melville, and I forgot the third.
Brian.
And so would somebody like to talk about Charlie very briefly, as though he doesn't need anything? We had Tino and Patrick, I believe, nominated Charlie.
And Tino, would you like me to go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. I've known Charlie
much longer than I. Yeah.
I've known Charlie since 2005. I think this committee saw Charlie's qualities on the committee. Much of the transportation work that he did in the Washington, D.C. area, he did on the committee, and he also did through the American Council of the Blind. A lot of the work that was advocated for that you didn't know that Charlie was working on dealt with the truncated domes that American Council of the Blind pushed. Also, he did an awful lot of work with working with ensuring that service animals were safely allowed on the system, accommodations were made for them. ACB also advocated for the installation of the elevators, dual elevators within the, and work to ensure that bus stops, pedestrian safety, crosswalks, audible pedestrian systems, all of that were things that we have come to know in Maryland, in DC, and in Virginia. Charlie has been a lifelong contributor in the area of transportation. And I think that he really deserves this award. He's been a real asset to the disabled community with WMATA. He also worked Access for All and worked on a lot of issues in that area, and also worked through the Equal Rights Center in DC, and did quite a bit of work also in the area in Montgomery County through the Commission on People with Disabilities in the area of pedestrian safety and floating bus stops. So I would urge a vote for Charlie. Let me just say that the other two candidates are also excellent candidates. We are not going to go wrong with any of these candidates that we vote on tonight, but I urge you to support Charlie Crawford. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Tino, would you like to do Brian?
May I speak? I proposed him only because of what I learned through the media about him. So actually, if I had to second the motion of Patrick's, that's what I would do. I knew Charlie as a mentor. And I also learned a lot through the iPod discussion of all his colleagues and friends who knew him both in Massachusetts and here in DC. And for that reason, I would second Patrick's endorsement.
Would you like to speak to Barbara?
May I speak to Charlie?
Okay. We're going to let Denise talk to Barbara. So we have one person on each person now, and then we'll take extras. Go ahead, Denise.
Phil, I was not prepared to, because I can't see what I had wrote about Barbara now, but she has done so many things, and
I wrote them down, and I, anyone who's not familiar with her work can read what I had presented. Her work with the lighting, her patience, with seeing the task all the way through, looking at it from a visual, a person with low vision, no vision, some vision, she's gone all the way. And there's so much that can be said, but I wasn't prepared. I didn't know I was going to be asked to speak today.
That's okay, Denise. Steve, do you have anything that Patrick hasn't said yet?
yes. I'd like to speak with Charlie, to Charlie at our meetings, because Charlie was a force for using judgment and logic in his decision making. And, you know, when he raised his hand and spoke, it was uncanny. Everyone listened up. And Charlie laid out his points and also his reasoning. And he almost always indicated not a determination as to what we should do, but he led us to it by being as articulate and as strong strong intelligently and as a proponent of our community of our committee as he could be. And so I'm very proud to support Charlie.
Thank you, Steve. I'll remind everybody that Charlie is the one that has consistently proposed a lottery for WMATA to raise money.
And Dr. Posner, I believe.
Yes, I was just disconnected for a moment, but I'm back on. I was just reminding everyone that Charlie always pushed for a lottery in order for WMATA to raise money and to auction off their tickets. Everyone should have received the written nominations that Anu sent out. And I'll ask that everybody read those again and then get their emails to Anu by this Friday so that Monday at the Bus Rail Committee, we can announce the winner and we can move forward with the ceremonies. Is that okay with you, Anu?
That is perfectly fine. Besides this, I believe we had only one by Anthony, and I.
I'm a little withdrawn that one.
Yes, I later realized I couldn't go with that. So yes, if anybody still wants to submit their feedback, please do.
Thank you all very much. And I think for our public comments, we pretty much exhausted public comments at this point. So, Anu, if you'll make your announcement as to how people can send additional ones into you at your email address.
Sure. I will make the announcement, but before I do that, I just want to, Elwar sent me an email, and this was with respect to Taryn Williams Hall's update. And he states, so I'll just read his comment for the record in public comments. Elwar wrote that video surveillance in Metro Access is just like other videos used on buses and Metro cars. There are cameras everywhere and they record everything and everyone, but it will be used when accident or behaviors or disputes while riding correct. So what is the issue with Metro Access to use same service being this a public transportation?
Thank you.
Okay. Now, if anybody is interested in sending their public comments, they can do so by writing to the following email. It's metroaacchair@vmata.com, all one word, metroaacchair@wmata.com, or you can call and leave a message for us at 202-962-1100. We are very prompt in returning phone calls. That is how you can contact us and provide your public comments. Now we can take the BRS report followed by the Metro Access report.
And we're on schedule.
Perfect.
Tino, take it.
We're down to the minutes. Of the, excuse me?
Bus Rail Committee.
All right. At the last meeting, we talked about the Fairgates alternate sounds. Terry came probably for the third or fourth time, and apparently there was some faultiness in some of the sounds, and she said that she would try and come back this coming BRS meeting. She also mentioned that they had to finalize what she was telling us about, which we were advising her on, by November 30th. But I assume that that's been delayed because she's coming back to us next Monday. we also talked about the station signage information. A great deal of information is given to us by Thomas Proctor and Brian Anderson. I also sent them some materials and asked if they would respond back about their role in choosing the kind of technology we were discussing. I wasn't clear on whether they had done the research on these things or whether it was the procurement office. So Anu, if you could remind them that I sent them an email, and it also went to all the committee members with photos of what I talked about at the last meeting about the interactive signs that other transit agencies use. And then I ended with a question about their role in researching and or deciding on the final hardware. We also talked about, let's see, the I think that was about it. Everyone has a copy. Minutes, please read them over before next Monday when we take it up again for approval. Thank you.
Thank you, Tino. Paul?
All right. As I said, so when we at our last Metro Access subcommittee meeting in November, we talked about the Metro Access sedan procurement and about the removal of the technical specification regarding the door open angle. After that discussion, there is still some committee members, or at least they would like to get a, they would like to request this topic to come back again with procurement there to explain their side for their reasoning for the removal at some point. So we do make that request. We also discussed the next generation Metro Access van solicitation in terms of our reservations. In terms of our recommendations, and we made is an AAC, and we will see after it's filtered through which ones will be possibly accommodated or honored, and what it looks like when the solicitation goes out as a RFP. Next piece was the easy pay conversion and password requirement. Mr. Schaefer began to discuss that and what it looks like, and when this might become possibly live, and beginnings of how this is communicated. He will come back this month at the subcommittee meeting to go more in depth of what that is going to look like, and also discuss the Metro Access web booking update. And my only question for this month's meeting is, Mr. Blake, is there still going to be a presentation about STAR? Because it said tentative.
Anu, can you confirm that or not?
Yes. Paul, I'm still waiting a confirmation on that. I have not received a confirmation from them. I'm still working on it.
All right. So what I was going to say, because I said the agenda is always still pending. If that does not happen, do let me know. And I would like to replace it with the topic about the Ms. Williams Hall's discuss any questions along with Mr. Blake about the what's happening as of January 1st with the camera system on board.
Sure. So I am going to work on it this week. And if we don't receive a confirmation still, then I'll be definitely in touch with you and we can update the agenda.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Any questions from any of the committee members?
Paul, this is Pat.
Yes.
A question. And maybe we can, fairly obvious, but I hear these questions starting to bubble up now. Where individuals are concerned with what they're hearing about with potential cuts on bus and rail, not having the benefit of this meeting and the assurance of the general manager, starting to worry that the area and the hours of Metro Access will be cut. So anything that we can do to make sure the word is out in as many ways as possible is going to be beneficial, because I've now received that question three times and I'm not generally in the mix too much. So
and that's why, Patrick, those you of see you me in the know. Yeah. I mean, you see me very much so at the last virtual public hearing and here to the general manager, say loud and clear, if there are any changes, even though right now, as I reiterate again, they've assured us that it will not change through June 30th of 2021. Right. If that needs to happen, please communicate this to us being, Metro Access customers as soon as possible so we can make adjustments in our own transportation needs.
Just reiterating that, Paul. Any and all ways possible. Yep.
Yes, but I would also, and I hear you, Paul, and that was a great point you raised, and we agree. If there's going to be a change in the Metro Access service area or ours, we're going to let you know. We're going to do that because that is the civil rights service you've heard me say time and time again, I'm bound to protect. But what I'm hearing from Patrick, and I think this is the message first, and what I'm hearing from Patrick is, yes, committee members and those in the general community, spread the word. You know, Metro, we made the commitment that we would not change the service area for all of fiscal year 21. And now we've gone through basically two rounds of reductions in fixed route. It was the original FY21 budget, then the FY21 budget piece that's beginning in January. And we have not changed the Metro Access service area or ours. You've heard the general manager tonight commit again that we're not gonna do so in FY22 either. If I'm hearing what Patrick was saying though, is that's what the message we need to get out to the public. Get out to your colleagues, your friends, fellow Metro Access riders, the Metro Access service area and ours will not be changed even at this point, even in the midst of all of these cuts and budget crises that you're hearing. And I'll just have to throw this in there and say again, because this relates to what Vanessa asked the general manager, and I think he reiterated it. And I just have to continue to point out the reason why I was able to make that commitment to my colleagues and ask my boss and then my boss's boss, the GM, not to change the Metro Access service area in FY21. And we're continuing it is because we're making Metro Access a public transit shared ride service that's equivalent to the fixed route. Mm-hmm. So I need you all to just always continue to understand when we're talking about alternatives, they're great and they have a role, But in a time like this, this is why we sometimes have to pull back on those alternatives, because at the end of the day, the few who would benefit from the alternatives are far outnumbered than the many who rely on the civil rights service of the paratransit. And that's what we're trying to protect, and we're going to continue to protect that service. So Patrick, I'm with you. I hope that the members of the AAC and the disability community at large say it loud and continuous. The Metro Access IDR. Service area is not going to change.
This is Pat plus IDR, sir.
If I can point out, it was brought up at the last board meeting that there cannot be a reduction in service without a public hearing. The only public hearing scheduled to have a docket, Mutual Access is not on that docket. So if you want to expand it and say there will be no reduction in Metro Access service unless there is a public hearing that is scheduled for that to take place. And so it may be possible, once the docket is set for the next set of public hearings for the 2022 budget, to make that comment on the Metro vehicles or on the telephone message that Metro Access will remain constant service until, you know, whatever. Because it's safe. If it's not on the docket, it's safe until it goes on the docket and there are hearings scheduled. So, you know, something to that effect might go out on the audio version of the phone calls.
So my ask then of Mr. Blake is, and maybe this should be a motion, but I'm going to ask of Mr. Blake, is it possible, can you do, since you have put back stock faith in this, that it will not change at least until the end of June of next year, can you do a robocall to everybody?
We can look at that. If that's the case, then what I would do is, one of the things we were kind of concerned with the last, what I call the FY21 plus budget hearings, that we said there wasn't a whole lot of outreach. I don't think it hurts for us to send a robocall to the customers to inform them about the budget hearings and remind them at the same time that there are no changes proposed to Metro Access. I'll make that commitment to you.
Okay. Do we need to have this as a motion, folks?
Well, go ahead, Paul.
All right. So
only if you don't trust me.
Paul, wait a minute. Hang on. Don't you think that it's more? This is Patrick.
Go ahead.
Wait until we have the budget finalized on Thursday before we.
Okay. We can wait until Metro Access meeting.
Okay.
Following the setting of the docket.
Okay.
So request that an announcement about Metro Access, about the budget, be sent out by robocall. Can we have a second?
Dr. Posner, this is, I know I'm wondering if Ms. Rush was trying to make some comments. Ms. Rush,
no.
Okay. All right.
So did you want to second that, Ms. Rush?
I second.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's open for discussion now.
So, Phil, I'm sorry, what was that again?
Following setting of the docket for the 2022 budget, a robo announcement can go out stating that Metro Access is not slated for any change in service area or time.
And you'll know that after the budget is final, right?
No, after the docket is set.
Okay, of course. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And then if something happens, they will have to set up a new set of hearings and a new docket, at which point another announcement can go out.
Right, okay. And that, yeah, that's perfect.
Access to a previous...
All right, if there's any other discussions on this matter, can we, I guess, Phil, vote on it?
Yeah, call the motion.
All right, all those who are...
Is anybody opposed to the motion?
Thank you.
Is anybody abstaining from the motion?
Right now.
The motion passes, so now Mr. Blake can blame us if they yell at him for making those robocalls.
No, we'll be good. I'll let you know ahead of time if there are any challenges to me making such a call.
Super, thank you.
Thank you.
Denise, I saw you light up. Do you have something to say?
Anything to add to my report, Ms. Rush, after all that?
No, she just muted herself.
Hello? Were you calling on me because I was confused with two people talking?
No. No, we were talking to Ms. Rush.
We're clear. I will take an opportunity to ask for any additional questions. If there are no questions or comments, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I have one.
Don't move.
Dr. Posner, this is Anu.
Yes.
Just want to share with everyone that for the bus and rail subcommittee meeting, we do have Montgomery County representation representative coming. So if you have any questions in advance that you would like to share with me, please email them to me so that the representative who comes attends our meeting is well prepared. If not, then that's perfectly fine. But just wanted to share that we will have Montgomery County in the meeting with us next week.
Great. I'd love to have them talk about their microbus project.
Okay.
Is it possible that we get someone from Northern Virginia?
Tino, it has been extremely difficult for me to get confirmations.
Okay.
I have been working on them pretty much every day. But okay. If I get any further confirmation, they will be on the agenda.
Okay, good.
New, this is Patrick. Who is coming from Montgomery County?
Right on.
Patrick, the name escapes my mind at the moment.
I'm sorry. What was their area of expertise? I'm just curious.
They're coming from planning.
I've been fighting with them for like 6 months. That's fun.
Well, you'll have your opportunity next Monday.
They're tired of hearing from me.
We'll be there.
I'll send you some topic areas I knew. Thank you.
Sure, please do. Okay. Doris, I see your hand up. Did you have any comments?
Yes, I did actually on the former topic about the docket. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding the docket now. Well, number one, I heard Mr. Blake say that Metro Access service area will not be changed, nor the days and times of service issue for the remainder of FY21.
But
am I correct? However, that there is at this point some uncertainty until the publishing of the docket whether FY22 may come up in the hearings.
Doris, the general manager said he is not requesting any changes for the 22 budget.
Yeah, I heard
but
that.
But absolutely certain,
Metro Access. Yeah.
The budget and the docket and the hearings have to be set by the board. And so if they suddenly decide to change that, that's a possibility, but I can tell you that Ms. Chinby and Mr. Goldman at the last Finance Committee hearing both requested that nothing be done to Metro Access. They actually asked why it wasn't on the budget, and they were told they hadn't asked for changes. The GM hadn't asked for changes.
I was just confirming, Phil, that's the case, and the only thing I want to add is if, for any reason that remains unknown at this time, that changes, we should have the advantage of adequate time to publish hearings that would do that, because one of the things that I wanted to say was that is absolutely my memory, and I'm sure it's yours, and Patrick's that changing the Metro Access service area or anything like days and times of service, other alignments, is a policy decision that was all discussed when they actually did change the service area back in 10. So I'm sure you're aware of that, but I just wanted to say the weight of that for us, and I hope we are able to say that the service area won't change until the end of FY22 in reality at some point, that it won't, you know, that it's not going to come up unbeknownst to us. And the only other thing I do want to say is that in the coming year, as we hopefully are transitioning from COVID, I think that we had discussed earlier having some discussion about the service area and the people in counties like Montgomery, PG, and Fairfax particularly, but even parts of, you know, Alexandria and D.C., that where there are people, particularly young people, who are trying to go to school and get trained and go to work, who are completely left out. And I think a consideration, really at least a serious discussion about going back to the original service area, really needs to be had.
That's fine. We know we can always add things to the agenda as we go forward. If there are no other comments, would anybody care to make an adjournment motion?
So moved.
Second.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Abstaining? Okay, we are adjourned. Everybody have a safe trip home.
Bye-bye. Yeah, bye-bye. Safe trip home.
Blake, see if you can get that picture to take with you. That's really nice.
Okay.
Anu, could I ask you a Zoom technical question?
Sure. Tina, could you give me one quick moment, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
Anu, tomorrow morning, when would you like to get together, or tomorrow afternoon?
Between 10 and 11 or after 12.
Okay, let's do it after 12.
Okay, I will send you an invite.
Okay, super.
All right, thank you everyone. Have a great evening.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Yes, Tina, how can I help you?
I'm looking at the white bar next to the windows, and there's the raise hand, the yes, the no. What is go slower and go faster?
Okay. So that is if somebody's talking a little too fast and you want them to speak a little
slow.
Yeah, so if you say go slower, you're going too fast, you're speaking too fast, or go faster, you're speaking too slow.
So it's an instruction to the speaker, or it actually slows down the sound?
Instruction to the speaker.
Okay.
Oh, okay. It just goes to the one speaker.
Well, so for instance, I just click on go faster, and I'm not sure, but if you go to the participants, it shows that I'm requesting to go faster. But if I click on it again, the icon gets removed. Just like you would raise your hands and lower your hands. When you click on the icon first, once it'll appear, then you can pull it down.
It'll appear to the person who's speaking.
So let's see. Do you see the participant list now?
Yes, that's what I'm looking at, the participant list.
Do you see anything after my name?
It's a little thing right with your initials in it. If that's how I sent you the message I sent you.
So that's a chat, but do you see two small arrows?
Yes.
Small arrows.
Pointing to the left.
Right. So that's indicating to go slow. That means I'm requesting for someone, for the speaker to go slower.
Okay.
So that shows my request.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. Okay. And my quick question, since he opened up the door, is how do you do gallery view?
Okay. So when you are looking at the, do you see that three dots horizontally and vertically, like a Rubik, the cubic?
Where would they be?
Okay.
Three dots, and I'm on an iPhone, so it might
be. So it might be a little different on mobile. I'm looking at the desk laptop.
So I need to look for three dots or three little vertical lines?
It should be, it's nine dots total. Three horizontal.
Oh, nine, okay.
Three columns.
Okay.
Right, so if you click on that, that'll give you the gallery view.
Okay.
And next to it.
I've seen that before, but I didn't know what it was, but I can't find it right now.
It's on the right-hand top corner. Wait.
Felipe, it's way at the top of the right-hand corner, way at the top. And if you click on those nine dots, it gives you a choice of, if I recall, three different views. And one of the views is the gallery view.
Okay. Yeah, mine just has leave. And then it has, I guess, like the Wi-Fi signal, the battery, and three vertical lines that are not the same height.
The three vertical lines is your reception, your cell phone reception. Okay. But if on your screen, it should be right at the top right-hand corner. It says speaker view, or you'll see a dotted square if you skill.
Yeah, I see the little speaker. I see the word Zoom, and I see the word, if I tap the screen, I have to keep tapping the screen.
So if you click on the speaker, it should give you option.
Okay. Yeah, all it does is dim my speaker. But I'll find it. I have seen that somewhere, so I'll find it.
Yeah. If you're looking at it at your desktop or laptop, it'll be on your top right corner of the screen.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. I'll know to look for that, but I have seen that. So thanks a lot.
Okay. Sure. No problem.
Thanks a lot, Anu. Yep. Thank you very much. Have a nice week.
You're welcome.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Have a great evening.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Anu. Thank you for doing a great job.
Oh, thank you, Carol.
All right.
It was a good meeting.
You have a good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye. You too. Bye-bye.